Chapter 3. Who in the hell is Brett Arquette? I'm so glad you asked. Starting with my family tree, my grandfather, Joseph Janny Steinmetz, was twice awarded the degree of Master Photography by the Professional Photographers of America. I donated his wonderful photo collection to the Florida Archives that can be seen here, floridamemory.com. I am a nobody, but I'm good with that. I never wanted to be a somebody. I just wanted to do my court gig, retire, bump around a few countries with my wife, and die. I was born in Sarasota, Florida, but at 1 year old, my mother, Lois Duncan Cardozo, got a divorce from her shithead cheating husband and moved to New Mexico with me and my two older sisters. Her brother was working at Sandia Laboratories and told her that Albuquerque was a target-rich environment for women who wanted wealthy husbands. And it was. My mother accompanied her brother to the on-base Coronado Club. I believe the ratio of women to MIT Master Graduate Engineers was 50-1. This might seem strange today, but back then a woman might date like 5 or 6 men on a regular basis. I don't believe it was a go-and-throw type of thing, but more like trying to see if you even liked on another. However, in short order, she decided on a man named Donald Arquette. She insisted he legally adopt all 3 of us children, and my name immediately turned into the rhyme, Brett Arquette, the name you can't forget. My mother was a writer and went on to become a popular young adult writer and an Edgar Allan Poe recipient of young adult literature. She wrote books you might have seen made into movies such as Hotel for Dogs and I Know What You Did Last Summer. Her full name was Lois Duncan Arquette, but wrote under the name Lois Duncan. So her pen name didn't change if she remarried. Strangely enough, almost as if she knew her pedigree would migrate down to me, out of her 5 children, I was the only child given the middle name Duncan, and then turned out to be the only writer in the family. I felt I had absolutely no business writing books. I had failed high school English, and even today, I don't consider myself a writer. Writing books isn't easy. In fact, it's a monumental pain in the ass. It's like this lead weight that hangs on you until you write the words, the end. It's easy to say you're a writer, but actually writing a novel from the beginning to the end? Well, that's a writer. After several attempts at writing novels, my strong suit ended up writing my popular techno-thriller Hail series. During my time at the court, in my free time, I wrote novels, invented a new method of taking depositions that paid off my house, and pushed the limits of what an innovative court could do with technology. I spent my first 30 years of life living in Albuquerque, New Mexico, until my sister Caitlin Arquette was murdered. Google it if you want to know more. After that life-changing experience, I felt you only live once. I always had fond memories of Florida, so I decided to pack up all my shit into my 1967 Chevy van and move to Orlando. Having a background in computers, I got a job as a computer operator at Travelers Relocation Company in Orlando. I'm not admitting this with a great deal of pride, but I was one lazy motherfucker. I was given 3 12-hour shifts on graveyard. The only problem was, I liked sleeping. What to do? What to do? As I was running jobs through this magic million-dollar one-ton cube of transistor chips, I thought to myself, if these goddamned million-dollar computers are so smart, then why am I doing all the work for them? I need sleep. This isn't fair. Life is so unfair. So I bit the bullet and became an expert in the computer language DCL, which stands for Digital Command Language, which ran the mainframe. When I started the Florida gig, I knew some DCL, but within a year of working graveyard, I had written code for a program I call RoboCop. It was the bomb. It did everything for me. I would arrive at 11 p.m. after a hard day of partying, start RoboCop, and go to sleep. There were 3 phases of jobs, with each job in each phase dependent on the next phase. Before, I was responsible for searching massive log files to see if a job had failed, but RoboCop searched them for me while I got some badly needed Z's. After all, I'd been playing volleyball and drinking all day. I had no business whatsoever searching for computer errors. In my state of inebriation, it would have been a dereliction of duty relying on my cognitive skills. RoboCop, however, could scan hundreds of log files in seconds with 100% accuracy. If RoboCop found a job that had failed, it would start beeping on my monitor to wake my sorry ass up. My program then halted the phases until I called a programmer to dial in and fix the program. Once the programmer notified me the job was fixed, I would click continue and RoboCop would finish running all the jobs for the entire night. After that, it ran the tape backups and even wrote my entire operator log, which my management required and printed it. The very last thing RoboCop would do was beep a steady alarm to wake me up and display the words, "Make coffee for the boss." No one ever discovered I'd automated my entire shift. They merely thought I was a consistent superstar computer operator that never slept on duty. Little did I know that I had become an expert due to laziness in DCL programming language, which got me hired by the Ninth Circuit Court as a computer analyst, the worst job I could have ever hoped for. When I was offered the job, I thought to myself, man, this will be wonderful working for moral judges, only to find out that most of them were some of the worst people I'd ever met. In later chapters, I will describe why. Most of you who read this book will think, holy shit, Brett is going to get his ass sued completely off. I mean, who goes up against an entire court system and believes they're bulletproof? When I showed my son the cover of this amazing book, he asked me, aren't you going to get your ass completely sued off? I had to take my boy aside and explain, son, anyone can sue anyone for anything. It's an American pastime. It used to be baseball, but now it's suing. What you're really asking is if someone sues me over this book, will they get a judgment in their favor? My son played with his phone, yet asked, so are they going to get a judgment in their favor? I responded confidently, you can't slander someone if everything you write is true. And if it's all true, then they're wasting their time because all my statements are backed up with documentation and witness testimony, albeit hostile witness testimony. My son thought about it again and asked, so are you going to get your ass completely sued off? I answered him as honestly as possible. I sure hope so, son. It would be the trial of the century as it pertains to judicial oversight and would make the entire Florida court system look like a bunch of legal idiots. He then asked, will all the judges in your book who broke the law get in trouble? I responded, that decision would be up to the Florida Judicial Qualifications Commission called the JQC, a judicial disciplinary agency in Florida. His phone chimed, and while he was responding to a text, he asked, what's the JQC? Although I'm sure my response went in one ear and out the other. Feeling a need to educate my son in Florida law, I said, the JQC was created by a 1968 amendment to the Florida Constitution to investigate allegations of judicial misconduct by the state's judges. It is not a part of the Florida Supreme Court or the state court system, so hopefully they will see the light. His 2-minute focus on our book conversation dissolved as soon as he got a new text message and left the room without a goodbye or further comment. Kids, these days. Am I right? For you, my fans, and legal beagles of integrity, I really don't have any reservations about writing this book, because as I told my son, you can't get a judgment against you if it's all true. Bless you, Johnny Depp. And what's funny is if a single person sues my publisher for this book, we get to depose and put on the stand every chief judge, past and present, and court administration employee who perpetrated or insulated the court from crimes and/or sexual abuse. We're not talking about only those who still work at the Ninth Circuit Court of Florida, but included are those human resource and court administration individuals who have long retired yet still harbor secrets that will be exposed. My publisher has a crack legal team just waiting in the wings to take on this case, and they're doing it for free just for the exposure. I like that price. Why can't everything be free? I'm fond of Florida's limited liability companies. I publish all my books under an LLC I created and own. See, as a writer, you can write anything on your own computer, and if it sits there and never leaves your hard drive, then you can't be sued for it. Once a publisher publishes your book, they are taking on any and all legal exposure. A Florida limited liability is a type of legal structure for an organization where a corporate loss will not exceed the amount invested in a partnership or limited liability company. Let's do some math. My total investment in my publishing LLC called PBIAB Publishing is the price it cost to file for the creation of the LLC, which was $175. So any lawsuits that we don't want to waste our time with, we will not fight in court. We will agree to pay the full default settlement, which is $175. Sure, it cost the entity who filed $400 for claims $15,000 to $50,000. And excluding attorney fees and other fees, these guys just lost $275. Now, if someone like Munyon, Perry, the state, or the Orange County files against my publisher, we will go to court just to fuck with them and promote my book via the press the trial will draw. It will cost them millions, and in the end, even if they win, they get $175. My attorneys are working for free for the press exposure. After dealing with some of the worst Florida has to offer, I really don't like judges and elected public defenders. With that said, I do love some of Florida's laws. I absolutely love that under the Sunshine Law, just about every record created by a state or county employee is a valid public records request, even though the judiciary and the legislature are not subject to the Sunshine Law. This doesn't cover judges who retired or quit. Since Perry is no longer part of the judiciary, both his secret folder and his real human resource documents are now applicable for request. With full realization that desperate psychopaths may take desperate measures, I've taken my time since getting fired to get all my technological ducks in a row. For example, my publisher made a one-time payment to our favorite Indonesian cold emailing company to continually send out my open letter to the 1.3 million United States attorneys my bots have ripped. Even if Munyon or Perry have me killed, I won't put anything past them. The message will continue to go out. I'm halfway done ripping European attorneys. Just between Italy, Germany, the UK, Spain, and France, there is an additional 1 million more recipients who will receive my open letter. Other than a full collapse of the internet, nothing can stop it. The point I'm trying to make is I won. Sue me, I have nothing, and you get nothing. I won. Sue my publishing company, you get $175. I won. Talk the state attorney into arresting me and throwing me in jail. I get three hots and caught and time to write the follow-up book and add all the really cool jail tidbits, which should add a lot of spice to the book. Maybe I'll even pick up the soap. What I do for my readers. Am I right? I won. Kill me and my family gets $1 million as in insurance. My wife won. See, I'm not writing this for the money. I'm writing it to shine a light on the horrors of a court gone rogue. Judges drunk on power. Court admin officials with their heads in the sand. A state Supreme Court that is completely out of touch with the core of their employees. They should protect us. They do not. I don't think I'm alone. I believe I will receive an equal number of horror stories from court admin employees around the United States. Someone has to stop this bullshit, and that someone is me. I might start an anonymous clearinghouse blog of crazy-ass court stories. I think my follow-up book, The Ninth Circus Court, The Fallout, will be very interesting. If you don't like cussing or bad words, then stop reading now. I use profanity throughout this entire fucking book for a few reasons. First and foremost, I'm super pissed off getting fired because Perry is still running the courthouse through his companion, Chief Judge Munyon. Therefore, Perry was factually the person who fired me, even though he left the court system and is a common attorney. That fuckhead. See, there's one right there. I thought I was done looking over my shoulder once that asshole left the building. I was so wrong. My second reason for getting nasty in this book is because I think it's funny. You know all the different ways there are to connect cuss words together. It's an art that I hope to master before my final chapter. After reading this book, you might walk away with the impression that I'm a vulgar person. I ask you to consider that I'm the offspring of an intensely vulgar environment in which I gave a third of my life. You want to experience vulgarity? Walk in my professional shoes for 30 years, traversing the court's filthy descending colon until you get preemptively blown out the other end of the judicial cornhole. I feel sullied just working there. And lastly, I believe there is nothing more potent in literature than profanity, especially if it's used judiciously. No pun intended, because it wakes up the reader and portends the writer's emotions. T, that's it. Now let's get to the good shit.